actually come around there.
Let me just say it's November 1st, 2001. And I'm doing my second interview with Reverend Luck, and this is Mika Brand, and we're in Esmond, Virginia.
Good morning. I have just moved to Esmond. I just got Deva.
You were just getting married.
Just getting married.
Last time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me there are 300 people at the wedding.
Right. Uh-huh. 300 people at the wedding. And we got married on the 25th of June, 1955, at the home of Nancy.
And which is in Esmond, right?
Well, yes, that's in Esmond. 1 mile from this church.
From this church?
Right.
Okay.
And when we got married, we lived here with her parents for just 2-3 months, I believe. And then we rented a place about a half mile from there. We stayed there for probably a year. And the people we were renting from became so rude that they would come into the house when we weren't there and go through things. And they accused us of destroying the cooking stove, which we didn't. Walking across the floor and the door just fell off of the stove. They gave us a hard time about it. But anyway.
Was it people that you knew?
Yes, we were renting from next door. They were next door.
Oh, so it was people that...
Neighbors.
That you had already known.
Oh, yeah. So, at least Nancy knew that.
Right.
I didn't know them too
That's
well.
Right, because you were there. Okay.
And we stayed there a little while, and they were so obnoxious that we had to leave. So we left there, and we managed to rent a house almost immediately across the road in front of that one. Well, we stayed there about a year, I guess. And to our surprise, the owner of the house, late one afternoon, he brought all of his stuff in his vehicle and said, "I'm moving in, you're moving out."
The owner?
The owner.
Oh, gosh.
So we had to move out then. So we went back to my in-laws, and they accepted us, of course. And we stayed there a while, and then I was able to rent another house, which is about a quarter mile from there. So we stayed there for 3 years. And the rent was so cheap that I couldn't afford to pay it.
So cheap?
Right.
That you couldn't afford to pay it?
I couldn't. It was $20 a month, and I couldn't afford to pay it.
Wow.
Because my job, back then I was making like... I don't remember exactly how much, but something like $30, $35 a week, working 6 days.
Wow.
That was what I paid my pay.
Wow.
And I couldn't afford to pay $20 a month.
Right. Well, your job at the time, was that with the drilling?
No. Okay. No, I was working at a service station there.
Okay.
Well, at least a used car dealer.
Okay.
And I didn't make it to $35 for the whole week. And we had a few bills, but I couldn't afford the $20. So the owner of the property lived in Connecticut. And I told him that, you know, I just couldn't afford to pay $20 a month. So he said, "Well, I'll tell you what we can do." He said, "When you have it and can afford it, you can pay it. And when you don't have it, don't even think about it."
Really?
Really. So I went for months and couldn't afford to pay $20, which seems awful. But I don't remember exactly how many months I didn't pay, but during that time, I tried to build a house, so I couldn't buy any property because nobody would let me have it. I had a neighbor that every time I tried to get a piece of land, he would do something to keep it from getting it. He'd go to the owner and block it so I couldn't get it. So that became, made me so frustrated that I didn't know what to do, so my father-in-law, he said, well, Carlton, I have some land joining where my house is. He said, I'll let you have enough to build a house on. And he said, nobody can block this. So he drew up a deed and let me have enough land to build a house on.
He sold it to you or he gave it to you?
Well, that was kind of funny that you would ask. He sold me the land for $100. And that was, well, enough to build a house on. And I don't know whether it was 1 acre or what, but anyway. So, I couldn't pay him $100, so I paid a little bit at a time.
Right.
I think it was like $37 total. And he saw I was struggling. So he said, I tell you what, you can have the balance of that for a wedding present.
Wow.
So we received the property for most of our wedding present. And that was like 56, 57.
This person in Connecticut, did you know him?
Well, my father-in-law had worked for his cousin who owned the property where I was renting.
Right.
He owned a big house on the property. But I didn't, I had met him, but I didn't know him.
Right.
But Nancy's cousin was working there, so he was one that talked me into trying to get the cottage to stay in.
Right.
But I didn't really know him, so I met him at that time, during that time.
Right.
His name was Lorraine Pittman.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, while I was there, I stayed like 3 years, I think. And in the meantime, I wanted to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
After my father-in-law had let me have the property, I went ahead and purchased the cinder block to build a base, put a basement in. And I did that. And then the basement just sat there because I couldn't build a house on it. So at the time, it was impossible to get a loan. Having been a veteran, U.S. veteran, Army veteran, I thought maybe they would help me. So I tried to get a VA loan, and that was almost impossible. And they said I qualified for $7,500 to build a house. And I had to think about it. I had to find somebody to lend me the money. Well, because I didn't have any credit, the banks wouldn't help me. So I said, how about getting a direct VA loan?
Yeah.
They said, well, that's fine, but there are 10,000 people in line ahead of you.
10,000?
10,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was discouraging.
This is a long time after the end of World War II.
This is Korean War.
It's even after that, right. After the end of the Korean War.
Yes. And so I decided, well, I don't know what to do. I kept praying and kept trying to find something. So I went to a lumber company, first place before that. Nancy and I went around to try to buy a mobile home. And we looked at them over and over and over and over. And we liked them, but we just couldn't buy a mobile home. Because we didn't have credit, they wouldn't let us have one. So
Catch 22.
Right. We drove all over the state of Virginia looking at mobile homes. And nothing could we buy. Although we liked them, they showed them to us. But we went home I was in tears every time. So I was determined. So I went to several lumber companies, lumber dealers, and asked them if they would help.
Lumber companies?
Yes. And they weren't interested. So I went to one last lumber company, and it was Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, Barnes Lumber, in Charlottesville. I said, well, we don't see why we can't help you. They sold everything I needed to build a house and completed it. So,
wait, let me understand. The other companies weren't interested in selling to you?
Because I didn't have any money. And they weren't going to let me have credit. So, then I tried the banks, and they couldn't help me. So I went to one bank. The last bank I went to was in Scottsville. And I talked to the manager there, so he told me, if you could get a house under the roof, I will let you have money to, after you get it under the roof, I'll let you have a loan to pay for it.
So what does that mean, under the roof?
Get a, build the walls up and put the roof on it.
Right.
And get this, when you get to, once you get the top on the house, he'd let me, you know I got a house there now, he'd let me have money to build it, you know, to pay for it. So I went to the Barnes Lumber at the time and asked, talked to them, and they said, well, of course, we'll help you. So I figured out everything that I need. I got me a set of plans, and I figured out what I need to build the house. And we took it to build the materials to the lumber dealer, and I told them what I had. And they said, no problem. So now I could build a whole house, and this is nothing interior, no sheetrock or anything, but I could frame up the house for $1,200. So I gave them the building material, and they brought the stuff out on and dumped it on my yard, and they were gone. I didn't see them. I didn't even see them when they brought it. So that means I can build a house. So
where did you get plans from? What does that mean, you got plans?
I was working for a contractor.
Oh, right.
And he just happened to have a lot of plans, and he had one, and I sort of revised it and built my house from there.
I see.
So, yeah, he didn't really think that I could build a house because he was paying me, I think it was $1 an hour, a carpenter.
Right.
And,
this is the man who cursed a lot.
No, this is another fellow.
Oh, a different guy.
He's out of my life.
Oh, okay.
This is a building contractor.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
Right. And, let me finish the story of building the house. So I had all these materials out on the yard, and got my father, who's a carpenter, and my father-in-law, who's a carpenter. The two of us, on the first Saturday, decided it was a sunny day like today, so we all met at this job site, and we started framing the house. And when people went to work on Saturday morning, they didn't see anything but my basement foundation. And when they came back home that afternoon, late afternoon, we had the walls up and had some of the rafters on the roof.
Wow.
And they just couldn't believe it. And what it was
just
actually for, it was really for, was because I had a brother in law.
Nancy's brother.
Right.
Okay.
So we framed that up, and then Nancy and I built a house for the next 6 months, day and night, or afternoon, evening, and night, no Sundays, because we never worked on Sunday. So we built a house, and 6 months later, just say the two of us, we were able to move into the house. And it was about 98% complete.
Wow.
And, but anyway, after we got the house under the roof, went back to the bank and asked the man for some money.
Well, that's all right. I can give you aid.
And he made a loan. And I almost fell over. And he made this loan, and it didn't take but It didn't take but like $4,500 to build a house.
Wow, that's amazing.
Oh yeah. And we got the loan and started paying things off. Paid the lumber deal off. And then when we finished, before we finished paying that, well, we were, after we had moved in, and our house was livable. So from there, we just started doing things. And
The contractor I was working for when I started building my house, I went to work one morning.
All right. I think you'll be all right.
Yeah. Okay. The contractor I was working for when I started building my house, I went to work one morning and told him I was going to be framing the house that day. Well, he knew better. He acted like he just couldn't believe it. You know, he would pay me 90 cents an hour. That's right, I remember now.
Not even a whole dollar.
No. So I told him, he said, I had told him day after day what I was doing on the house. So when he asked me this particular day, he said, well, what are you going to do on your house today, Carlson? I said, when I go home, I'm going to put the shingles on the roof. Well, he just didn't believe that because it was impossible. So on my way home that afternoon, I just happened to look in my rearview mirror, and I saw his little pickup following me, but he stayed at a distance, hoping I wouldn't see him. So I just acted like I didn't see him. And I pulled into my yard. I didn't have a driveway, just a yard. And I pulled into the yard, and about a minute or 2 minutes, he pulled in behind me. And he got out and shook his head. He said, well, you were really telling the truth, weren't you? I said, well, of course I'm telling you the truth. He thought I wasn't building a house. He said, well, I don't say you can build a house with the money I'm paying you. I said, well, a lot of praying, and it worked out. So,
what alphabet did you pull?
Oh, well, he was out done, so I went back to work the next day, and he told the guy, well, you know, Carlson is really building a house, and he's got it under the roof. So, anyway, I stayed with him just a little while longer, and he wouldn't give me any more money. So, I met a guy, he just wouldn't.
I thought you were about to tell me he gave you a raise.
Oh, no. He was paying other carpenters, and he was using me as a carpenter for 90 cents. I think he did give me a dollar. I was maybe up to a dollar, but never over.
Right.
But he paying other guys like $6 an hour. And
the other guys were white?
Yeah, they were white. So they were getting $6 an hour.
That's why, right?
Oh, yes, that's why. So he was working me overtime just for that kind of money. So the drywall man who was doing all the sheetrock for him, he came by and saw me working, and he said, I sure would like to hire you. I said, well, hey, what do you got to do, offer? He said, well, I'll give you 50 cents an hour more than you're getting, which for me, that would be a dollar and a half. So I said, yes, I'm interested. So the following week, he hired me. And so the other fellow that I had been working for, he came back and tried to get me. He said, I'll give you 50 cents an hour more if you come back and work for me. I said, no way, I'll never work for you again. So I didn't. So I just stayed with the drywall man for, I think, like 2 years I worked for him. And then he didn't like things. He said I was learning so much that he had to get rid of me.
And the sheetrock guy.
So he let me go. And I just started doing different jobs from then on. And a lot of times I worked for myself, you know, and when I said work for myself, self-employed.
Right.
And I just went from there. I started doing a little job, and then I'd get a permanent job with another contractor. So I managed to make a little more money and finally got to where I could handle my situation.
Right, because all this time you were making payments on the loan, I assume?
Oh, yeah. But they put them so low that I could handle them. They didn't pressure me. So then I started getting on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And things got a lot better. And so from there.
Do you want to maybe get outside? Do you think that that'll
be? Anyway, it's better because I know this is not doing
you want to. Well, it is picking it up, but.
Okay.
But it's picking them up too.
Yeah. So we're upstairs now.
Okay.
So you finally got, you got on your feet.
Right. What that means, I was sort of able to pay my bill.
Right.
And from there I went to different building contractors and I stayed with them. But everyone I worked for, I guess just after that I stayed several years because they treated me fair,
mm-hmm.
you know. Well,
are these contractors in Charlottesville?
Yes.
And you were living in Esmond?
Right.
How would you get?
Oh, I had an automobile. I would drive.
Okay, your own.
Oh, yes. I've always had an automobile.
Okay, what does that mean, always?
Well, ever since I got out of the Army. I had one before I went in the Army, but I bought one as soon as I got out of the Army. I'm not much at walking.
Yeah.
But I lived out in the country.
Right.
Like 14, 15 miles out.
Right, right. In Whitehall.
Whitehall,
maybe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and then when I was here, we mm-hmm. moved to Esmond, this is like 15, 16 miles from Charlottesville.
Right.
So I had to have a car in order to get to work. So,
was there public transportation from here to Charlottesville?
No. Two, three times they had a little public transportation, but I never, ever rode it.
Mm-hmm.
I always had to have an automobile because, I never know when I'm going to have to go from one job to the next. And,
right, right.
And without transportation, it just was impossible.
Right.
And I had to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked for contractors, two, three more local contractors, and they treated me okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job with a big contractor in Charlottesville. Worked out at Copley Hill. That's it. I guess you know where that is.
Is it somewhere
part of the university? Yes, okay. Out on 29.
Mm-hmm.
Barracks Road area.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I helped build that section.
Oh, where the basketball courts are, U-Haul.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There's dorms over there.
Right.
I think.
That's
okay.
Right.
So you helped build.
I helped build those.
Oh, okay.
And that was just a wonderful time, and I learned a lot while I was there, and all this time. And I don't know what we've said about this.
Mm-hmm.
Have I said anything to you about my being called to the ministry?
No, actually, I have it written down, but I was going to ask that.
Okay, well, okay. At this time, I've already been called into the ministry. So should we get into it?
It's your call if you're ready. Okay.
Okay, in 19 and... Well, let me go back a little bit.
Okay.
After Nancy and I got married, her father was her pastor. He was Reverend W.D. Ward. And she told me, I had been a church goer before I married her, but then I got a sort of bum deal in the army, so I just stopped going to church.
Mm.
So she told me after we got married, well, you know, you're going to have to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't rebel against that, so I started going. And to my surprise, a year after we started going, after I started going to church, an amazing thing happened to me. I was listening to my radio, remodeling a house for a lady, in spare time, and I was listening to this preacher on the radio, and he convinced me that I was in the church, but I did not have eternal life. And he really got my attention, so he told me what I had to do. So I got ready for that. And a revival, as we call it, started with what's going on in one of the father-in-law's churches.
Where was he a minister? I think at
he was minister
Mount
Pleasant.
Okay.
But he also was a minister up in Nelson County at the same time.
Okay.
So I went to the revival up there that night.
That was at Mount Pleasant?
This is in Nelson County at Ebenezer Baptist. And while sitting there listening to the man preach, he just made us ask a question. Well, he said, but all of the saved people or all the Christians, these people, that raise your hand. Well, everybody in the church raised their hand but me. And he saw that. Then he said, well, now I want all of the sinners to raise their hand. Well, at that point, I still didn't raise my hand because I wasn't sure. From what I had heard, I don't know what I am. So he picked me out of that whole crowd of people and pointed his finger and said, you young man in the corner. I said, yes, sir. He said, I asked all the Christians to raise their hand and you didn't raise yours. I said, no, sir. He said, well, then I asked all the sinners to raise their hand. You still didn't raise yours. I said, no, I didn't. He said, well, are you a Christian? I said, I don't really know. Are you a sinner? I don't even know that. So on my way back, he didn't know what else to say to me. That's all all the information he could give. So on the way back, I was riding with my father-in-law. So he told me, he said, you know, you really put me on the spot. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we're thinking about making you a deacon in the church. And he said, you don't even know if you're a Christian. I said, you know, I really don't know. And he went through a routine as the Baptists will go through. Do you believe this and do you believe that and do you believe the other? And if you believe this, that makes you a Christian. I said, yeah, I believe all of that. You believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God? I said, of course I believe it. And you believe he died for your sins? I said, I believe that. I said, but I was listening to, is it okay? I was listening to Dr. Oliver B. Green, who was coming on the radio, and he told me out of the 8th chapter of Romans, he said, if you don't have the Spirit of Christ, you're none of his. And I said, I don't have the Spirit of Christ in me, and I know I don't. And so he told me, I'm not saved. He said, if you die today, you might have your name on the church roll, but you're going to hell. Just like that. And it frightened me. So I started praying the only way I knew how, and asked the Lord to save me. So when I came back from left this church that night, my father told me I had him on such a spot. Well, I didn't know what else to do. We sat and talked for perhaps half hour before we went in the house after we got back home. And I don't want to go to hell when I die. And you know, so I let him know this. Well, this just happened. This light was on like a Friday night, and Sunday service revival was starting at Mount Pleasant, where he was my pastor. So I went to church that Sunday morning, and I was so out of it, not knowing what's going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And all I could do was just silently pray. Mm-hmm. And sitting in the church that day, my oldest son at that point, he was just a little babe. He was born like May, and this was first Sunday in September, same year, 1956. So when I'm sitting there just listening to the sermon, and I just don't know what to do, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, I felt two persons, one grabbed me by each arm and actually lifted me up out of the seat and put me in the aisle and marched me up to the front of the church. And there was no one visible. And I went up there, I was 24 years old at the time. Huh. And I went up to the front of the church and I stood there, tears running down my cheeks, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know, I knew somebody, but I couldn't see them.
Meaning the people who were grabbing you.
No, it wasn't people, right. It had to be angels. It had to be.
Right.
And they led me up there, and I was just standing there crying, not boo-hooing, but just crying. Mm-hmm. So my father-in-law told one of the deacons to just let me have a seat. So I sat on the front seat in the church, and my father-in-law was preaching. And at the end of the service, mm-hmm. the end of the preaching, this old preacher from Charlottesville, mm-hmm. he was sitting in the pulpit, and he told my father-in-law, so he said, we'd better go down and pray for this young man, mm-hmm. or boy, whatever you call him. Mm-hmm. And he was like 70 years plus.
Wow.
And when he said, let's go down and